Welcome to another episode of the Bites of Wisdom podcast. I am one of your hosts, John Ballone. In this episode, our conversation explores the process of recruiting and sourcing new talent for a technology team. Jeremy shares his experiences with interacting with recruiters, and we talk about the importance of setting expectations and the pace of communications, about how timelines are important, and how the role of the hiring manager really needs to be driving the process in the organization. Finally, this episode ends with a talk about the negative aspects of the stump the chump style of interviews. If you're ready, we're ready. Let's roll. Jeremy, one thing leaders don't talk about a lot, and honestly, it's definitely differs a lot, obviously, between firms, is the process of recruiting, is the process of sourcing new talent for a team that you're building or even an existing product development team that you're now taking over. Before you started your company, you spent a little bit of time in the market, and you've talked about this openly on the podcast. So I figured to throw this question to you and open up the topic. Tell me a little bit about your recent experiences with recruiting, and specifically, how did you navigate the churn?
There's a couple things I want to hit on in the opening. When I was looking, I'm going to say this frankly, fire and forget via LinkedIn is a waste of time. People think it's useful and it's not. We talked about this in the past while mentoring. It takes time to tune things and make them right. But the part that I kept on running into problems was expectation setting. And I'd talk to somebody, the phone over, you'd go, well, and then we would wait. And then it would be handed off to somebody internally. Yeah. And you would just be in this no man's zone of unknown waiting. Didn't matter what role it was. Didn't matter how senior, how junior. Didn't even matter if the role description was really accurate for what the phone interview even was. It just got weird. And then you start doing a little more experimenting. I started using my network more, talking to more people and working with relationships. And that was far better. So then I go meet people for coffee and have a wonderful conversation. And they'd be like, hey, timing's not right.
Yeah.
As I was always thinking, but let's talk in 6 months. Let's keep in contact.
Right.
But every now and then things would all line up really well. So you have a good phone interview, you get the screen, maybe even get to the second technical, and then it would just die.
So when you mean die, you mean just completely
radio silence.
Communication stops. This is like a full on ghost.
Yes. And it got to the point like where I've been on the other side when I was doing hiring, I started changing it. But like I talked to people. What's the expectation for next steps? And they'd be like, what do you mean? I'm like, do you have a time frame, a goal for the follow-up? When can I expect a follow-up email communication? You know, formal, nice stuff you'd expect from an executive level interaction. Some of the departments would look at me like, what do you mean? We respond to emails within 3 days. And I'm literally looking at you expect me to follow up and you just 3 days, you don't have any set. Well, it usually takes about 4 to 6 weeks.
Wow.
And I it was baffling to me. It was, let me pivot this really quickly to what good looks like. At one of my past firms, the talent team was the best I've ever dealt with. They were the best because you got in the door.
Spencer?
Yes. You got to the door, but there was an expectation set. The phone interview went well. They got an answer on whether it went well within 4 hours of the phone interview. And then from there, the ticker stopped. 2 weeks to make a decision. That was our internal goal. So things happened. Didn't matter. You had two weeks to get to the decision. That means you lined up everybody. You get that interview. You get the right people in front of them. And you make the time to make the decision. I hired more people that were on the edge about the company. But they said, the interview process is a company I want to be a part of. That was three people that sit there and go, it's always a crapshoot, but if you run it like this, things are going to go well.
I was on the other side of obviously I know the person you're talking about. So I know a little bit about that process. And I do have to say it was quite impressive. You know, I've been up until that part of my career, I've been part of a whole different types of both sides, interviewing people coming in, being a hiring manager, being a person who's managing a bunch of people hiring. And that was the most impressive interview process that I had ever been in. And it didn't go the way where we had worked together again, but even after the fact and months later, I got follow-up calls.
just to check in, just to say, how are you doing? And that happens sometimes when you meet people and you jive in an interview, but maybe the role's just not the right person. It's not the right time. That person's really smart people that know when they meet another really smart person, will keep that connection past the interview. But a recruiter, that never happened to me. And I hate the word recruiter's not correct,
he
right?
He was just awesome.
He was just an awesome person. But the point is that that's great. That is what is great. That is the process, in my opinion, that everyone should be striving for, because there isn't really like a standard in most companies.
But like I give you the timer from, but how do you make that happen? How do you get to the point where you could sit there, we will make a decision to an offer? And it wasn't to get a decision, it was to get a decision from the talent, them to have a decision back to us. That's an aggressive timeline. That means we have to have everybody set up to do the interviews. We have to got time slots pre-set up so that people are available. There is no jockeying to go find time on calendars to get an interview. Yeah. That person is expected to move things because that's how important the process is. And we did it all the time. We did it multiple times. And when it would happen, sometimes we couldn't get a decision in 2 weeks. And we called up the client, me and the talent acquisition person, Spencer, and we go, we're sorry. We couldn't get it done. We don't have time. We didn't meet our internal metric. And we told you, we apologize. We would like another week because blah, 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 whatever reason it was. And we go, it's insurmountable. We couldn't make the decision. So we go. There are some times when I sit there and go, like, I need an executive sign off. I need a different person besides me to sign off this because it takes two people. Didn't matter. We're going forward anyway.
And here's the thing. The commitment in an organization to be able to move that fast and be that decisive, it raises the bar so much for hiring people that you're going to think twice about any hire you have to do, or at least the ones where you need to make sure you stick or be as close to a sticking it as possible.
I'm going to play the both sides of this. It also meant the negotiations went really easy. It didn't mean we have a bunch of back and forth with people playing one job against the other.
Yeah.
We're like, our goal is to get a timeline. We're making this commitment. We ask you to make it too. And it wasn't ever said like that, but it was implied. We're looking to get a decision from you in 2 weeks, and we're going to make sure that our side is on point. And what happened is people go, look, I want to be a part of this. I just want to be a part of this. And then we go to offer. And the company I was at was really good about how they did all that. It was very structured. It was very well done. But it was always the manager, and the manager drove everything. But then the part you mentioned was that over time, and that's the timing and alignment, the amount of good people that companies pass by because they aren't aligned on time is bonkers. And this is something I think is something greatly missed, is I came into every interview for all the organizations underneath me. Why? Just to chat, say hi, blah, 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 but establish a relationship. Because if that didn't work out, timeline, different roles, future, 6 months later, that relationship was already established. I could go back, keep in contact, and try to align over time. Of course, this recruiter also did this. He did that even better than me, but we tried to see if we can create the environment that when the world changed it on our organization and we needed somebody, we had six or seven people who were like, this person would be perfect. Let's call it back up. And that person would always answer the phone.
So now you're talking specifically about, you know, like some cases, but the brilliance of that, right, from an organization perspective, I don't know if that's something you started doing or that's just part of the culture, but the brilliance of
that. I wish
I
could take credit. It was not me. I will always try to replicate it, though.
I'm going to try that as best as I can now, because you're creating a camaraderie bond now between you and the team. You have a contact now and a face, and the person knows that you're accessible to them, which is what you want as a leader, right?
Yep.
And years down the road, when you're trying to get something done, that person's going to remember that.
I still get reached out to. I'm long gone from that company. We still talk. I still chat with people, miscellaneous, that we were in contact with because they were potentials. They're still potentials because they were good people. They're good resources. They're part of my extended network now.
So there's also the bad way, the bad kind of process. And to me, everyone knows what that is, right? That is the that is just firing and forget in LinkedIn. That is people not responding very one way. It's 100 or 200 messages or resumes out for every maybe one or two responses you get back. How do you make it better?
The only person, so here's my opinion on this, is pretty straightforward, is the manager is the only person that matters.
Yeah.
And if the manager is not involved in the entire process, prepare yourself for a really hard slog. But it's really easy when the person that you're trying, that needs the role, that has the right incentives, they're like, look, my team is on fire. I need this talent now. And here's why. And they understand it. They're the person that if they talk to the person, they can make things happen because they're going to drive it forward. All the middlemen and efficiency and leveragers or whatever term you want to use it that doesn't have the team responsibility of getting that work done isn't have the same incentives to get it pushed forward as fast. The manager has to make the time. The manager has to be available. And the manager has to be the one driving it. And if they delegate it, that's a hard thing to delegate. It's a very dangerous thing to delegate.
Well, here's the thing. The crazy part is that for a lot of places that I've worked, and even maybe the place I even work now, that's it's not that easy for a hiring manager to take control over that process or be a lot more involved. I mean, granted,
it's awful. It's also often an awful experience because these are other people they think that is their job.
Yeah.
But they don't have the right incentive. It's not that they're not good at their job. It's that their incentives are, they get in like a big 10,000 person. They're going to do a lot of this. But the person that's got to make the decision is the manager with the team that knows that that has a scale issue right now, and they understand that.
So I can say one of the things that has been great at my organization, and as a hiring manager, talking specifically here, being engaged as often as I can with my technology acquisition team, my sourcer, understanding, even if I'm not on one or two layers up from the actual hiring manager, understanding where things are in the process. That communication needs to happen. And I've been in a place where I've honestly never talked to the talent acquisition team, unless there was a problem or if it was a visa approval, something that was out of not the happy path or the ordinary. I talk to my talent acquisition person now, maybe 2-3 times a month, which, and I'm not even hiring heavy, right?
Yep.
And it's that communication where it seems in certain organizations, it just falls through. People don't, they've turned it into this as a service where it's like.
And that's something that just, I don't understand. It's so easy to think that this is just, something somebody else does, but it's not. It's going to make or break your team. And the longer it stays unfilled, the longer the process wallows because you're busy and there's a fire burning down and because there's always these operational issues and then there's all these things. None of that matters if you're not spending the time doing the hiring because it will never fix itself. If you're down a person or two or a 5 to 10 person team, that adds up really bad. But more importantly, everybody that's doing all the work knows it's going bad. And it knows that the manager is on 1,000 meetings and don't know if he's putting the priority in trying to fix this problem. Yeah. Nothing is worse than that doubt.
Nothing's worse than that. And I've been on both sides of that situation, being someone waiting for the relief, being, or maybe it's all three sides of that situation, being a hiring manager that has to try to hire something, but then for one reason or another, not being able to. And then being a person that has had to stop my teams from hiring and cause some of that. Those problems inside of an organization. And it's not easy from all perspectives because there are sometimes very legitimate reasons for all of that to happen. But I think I've seen, let me step back and say that one thing I think you'll agree with me with, and we talked about it on Sun, we alluded to it on the DevOps episode, is that process and finding a process that can work, and we mentioned ITIL, is very good.
Yep.
And I think in all of the teams and organizations that I've been a part of, that's been put a process around it. And generally, most things will fix themselves. It's odd how not for hiring. Honestly, I think it's so much better to have an organic relationship with the talent acquisition than it is to just interact with them behind a ticket.
Oh, so talent acquisition is a human person.
Yeah.
They're a person that is there. What? Extrovert-ish, they're outgoing, they're talking, and they will tell you so much about what's going on. But you also got to use them as negotiation. They're your pushback when you're sitting there going like, hey, my comp bands aren't aggressive enough. Well, you need to understand that you need to be making that story. So does the other person, your talent partnership. He needs to be making that. How do you do that? Make sure that you guys are aligned on, hey, why is this not working? Why is this band not aligning to what we're expecting? We're there. And he's like, I need you to find somebody in the next band up and the next band down for an interview to see where we're messed up, see why we're not able to make our comp numbers work for this particular role. And then we can have a different conversation about how making all those things align. But the fun part about that is you need that relationship. You need that partnership at a whole different level than just being like, hey, I talk and here's what I'm looking forward to. I used to meet with mine every week, even if I didn't have an open rec account. We'd go for a 15-minute walk, or if we had open health care, it's 30, 45 minutes. But I was the closer, and I was always available to him. He called. I jumped off meetings unless they were critical incidents. Why? Because he was the differentiator for my teams, because I could onboard people. And it was fantastic. Now, there's the opposite. And these are something that I worry about as my organizations got bigger, was delegating the authority to other managers and teaching them how to onboard people and how to interview. That's why I said I was always in some interview at some point in time, was because people don't know how to interview. I had some unbelievably bright teams that were doing stump the chump, and they would ask all these questions. And I
So I think this is actually, this is a part of the, that we haven't planned, but can you explain stump the chump? Because I hate this kind of interview, and more importantly, from an interviewee, and more importantly, if I'm on the other, and I've been on the other side of an interview where the other person tried to do this, it is the worst experience.
It is horrible. It says you don't know what you're doing as an organization. And first of all, so stump the chump is you just throw random complicated questions at people, doesn't matter, if, without context, and you try to find out the boundaries of what they know with really weird esoteric questions. Google used to be famous for these, but then you still get people coming out of academia, seems to be a dominant, how do you do an optimized a red blue tree in Python? And I don't want pseudocode, I want real code. And I'm like, that is a useless.
Not only is that useless, I personally never can answer those questions, because the first thing that comes, that my response in my head, and it's like this blinding light, is that you're never going to need that at your job. 1% of maybe the people that you, that work need those kind of questions, the answers to those kind of questions.
But they destroy. So you tried to establish, like I said, that relationship from the get-go, that we're here to execute and move forward. And then you get those, and then it destroys the confidence that the company is what they're doing with hiring. And that's when I used to say to all my managers, understand, you're looking for finding a talent match fit, but if you can't find out what this person's good at, that means you failed. If you can't tell me what this person can do for the organization, but we might not need that, but he can do this or she can do that. If you can't figure out why this person's been employed for 20 years and been relatively competent, then you need to be able to do that. But the inverse side is, interview is a sales job. You're selling the company. You're selling the team. You're selling the partnership. You're not just trying to find out who the best technical whiz bob special guy is. You're trying to find somebody that wants to work with a team. How do you do that? Being honest, communicating, talking, being inviting, not trying to make the person like feel like they're an idiot. Because guess what? I don't want to be a part of a team where everybody goes around trying to make everybody look like idiots.
The way I view it is that as a hiring manager, or honestly, or even a person doing it one interview out of three or four, right? You should be going into that interview thinking about how the person on the other side of you is going to solve and help for a problem that you have. How can you put them onto a problem? And you should be able to think about easily working with that person. You need, it needs to be someone that is going to add velocity to your team. Not going in there to see, okay, which one of us got a better score on algorithms.
No Google. You can't type it. You can't use Google. I'm like, what the heck? God. Oh, drives me nuts. But the sales aspect's not lost on me. Like this is an interview is a bi-directional thing. They're interviewing you. You're interviewing them. So you do need to sell it a little bit. No, you don't got to, you're not like a high pressure sales. You got to be like, look, put an accurate face forward. Tell them what you need. Tell them the problems. There's nothing wrong with saying, like we talked about this in DevOps, is like, hey, we don't have a full CI/CD and we'd want to eventually get to fixing them.
Yeah.
But we're not there yet. We're hoping to get there in a year.
Yeah.
Because we had a lot of the work. Oh, well, what are you doing now? Right now we're doing this and we're building automation on this, 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 this. And this is about, oh, okay. Yeah, I can work with that.
Or so yes, and you turn it into a conversation and you let that person start to open up and talk about how they would help you fix things.
Yes.
That right there, that conversation, that's going to be what you do every day working with this person. So if you can turn that type of interaction with the person into a positive, very healthy thing that where you both leave and you're like, yeah, this person I can work with, then you know you got a solid hire.
Yeah. And generally, it's about can they fit in the team at that point in time? And then, of course, the execution. There is a unique problem I kept on running into, which was I kept on asking when we had like, you know, you have two or three people that are like, this person's good technical. They'll feel like they're, but I don't think they're at the right bar for their comp band.
Okay.
And so you're the finally there that in that situation, I was always brought in. Jeremy, go in, talk, but kind of tech them out. Where do you think they are? So I go in. I go, tell me the topic he wants to talk about. Anything in technology. We can explore MySQL replication. You want to talk about cloud Azure, yeah. Anything you want. We'll talk about the topic. This person is the most authoritative. And the amount of candidates that couldn't come up with a topic and prepare in any way, shape, or form by just saying what they wanted to talk about was surprising to me. And it wasn't that I think they didn't know it. They were just so taken back by being asked, what topic do you want to talk about? What best represents you? And it was one of the most odd things that happened three or four times during one or two hires that I sit there and go like, we can't do this anymore. It's making people uncomfortable.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think that entirely depends on you can't be someone new. You're going to, you know, someone, you weren't saying that to someone that was fresh out of college, were you?
No. These were people 10, 15 years, yeah. Sometimes 20 years.
100%. Yes. Okay, good. Put that aside because I was like, wow. But I agree. I would love that question. Honestly, that would, for me, that I could, if I couldn't sit and talk through that question with the person on the other side, I wouldn't want to work there.
Yeah. One of the best interviews was you actually know the person. He asked me one question. His question was like, you can take this any way you want. The question was one question. Your finger is over a mouse with a cursor over top of a link in a web browser. You click down and release the mouse button. What happens?
I think I know who asked that.
I know. You know exactly. I got to the ARP request in an hour and 12 minutes. And I got some of the ARP packets wrong because we started going through how to make sure, because it was a clean ARP table. There was no ARP entries. We went through the whole process. But in the process, he comes back and he goes like, that was a great conversation. I go, you didn't talk. He goes, I didn't need to. You asked good questions. And it was one of those interviews where he had a really good gauge of my technical acumen. This was 20 years ago almost. From one question, but letting me talk and letting me ask questions.
Wait, 20 years ago, maybe I don't know who you were talking about.
20 years? No, it was 15 years ago.
Oh, okay, got it. Honestly, I don't even know if I can answer that question.
You can answer that question.
I probably could. I've never tried. Yeah. But that's an awesome conversation. And I feel like...
And it had nothing to do with my role.
Nothing to do with your role.
Nothing.
Yeah. But it kind of did.
Eventually.
Yeah. Well, no, that particular job, you kind of needed to be able to talk and interact that way. I've seen in my career, and it boils my blood, stump to chump. It doesn't make any sense. But so why do people keep using it? Like, is it because, I honestly don't think, I think it's because that no one knows how to interview well. It's just not something that anyone's seen on a consistent basis.
How many people get feedback around their interview process?
Yeah, I've given feedback around the process, but not often.
So one of the things, this was way back in time, I interviewed for a peer role at one of my jobs, and I went to my calendar and we had done 140 phone interviews for a junior role. And I went to my boss and I go, the problem is not the candidates, it's us.
Yeah, at that point, it's you.
It's 100% us. And my boss at the time did not agree. He goes, no, we have a high expectation. And I go, no, we have the wrong expectation. It is clear as day. This is data. This is unassailable. No, we're just getting bad candidates. That is the most telling broken process ever. One, the manager obviously doesn't believe in how they're getting talent presented to them. Two, they don't believe that they have any pushback on the ability to what they're asking for is not what the market fit is of capabilities for what they're trying to pay. There's so much broken with that process.
Yeah, I'm just looking down right now because, you know, that is waste so many people's time. And it is so, let's go back to a little bit at the beginning of the conversation. You said that the team knows, right? And I mean, 144 phone calls, your team fucking knows.
I wasn't the manager. Of course I knew. Yeah. I literally was the person going like, this
but,
is
but broken. The other people, yeah. And more importantly though, your manager doesn't value your time enough to tell you to stop doing it or to try to go fix it. Like, that sucks.
It's this very, it's this weird thing of we need the right candidate. And, yeah. And they actually, and so this is the weird incentive structure that I think is really broken. It's like bad incentives around making a bad choice. So in other words, they are so petrified of hiring a bad person because they don't know how to deal with it. So they push all of it down to finding the perfect squirrel. And when you're hunting for a perfect squirrel, you're destroying your team's ability to onboard, trust the management, trust the structure. And you're like, well, what? So it's this really weird thing because the organization or the culture can't deal with a bad hire. And that's why I think Netflix and a lot of those organizations got it right. We're going to make mistakes. It's okay to hire people wrong. We're going to make it okay as we can for that other person within reason. But we're going to say, nope, didn't work out. Thank you. Here's a severance package you can buy. When I read that HR document about tech hiring from Netflix, I was like, this is the most brilliant thing. It removes the incentive problems around searching for the perfect candidate.
Yeah. And it also removes the whole concern for teams that are operating or have issues with people that they can't get rid of that person because it took so long. It's on cost fallacy. Yeah, no, I think it's brilliant.
I think we could do a whole episode of how the tech industry has way too much sunk cost fallacy all over the place.
In fact, I think that's on our Kanban board as an episode. But so let's talk a little bit more about the incentive structure. So we obviously know what the incentive structure is for the hiring team, but the person doing the hiring, but what's the, what are some of the other weird incentives that you've noticed for other people and stakeholders in that process?
The weirdest one is the one I talked about, looking for the purple squirrel because you can't do anything once it's there, or allowing toxic people to stay in teams. I mean, that's just a broader problem, but it shows itself up. And I think the easiest way I've ever found to identify it within teams is their hiring processes. The other one is when organizations outside of the manager are pressured on cost, not capabilities. So that is one of the weird things I find in talent organizations. Their job is to negotiate down or keep the price of each employee as little as possible. And I understand that in a market-based economy, but I don't like that incentives if the manager's not kept in sync or been a part of the process. because it can really ruin the relationship of onboarding a senior, particularly a senior people, is they feel like I was nickel and dime for $10,000 on 500.
Yeah.
Why am I talking about this? But that other person on the other side that was just doing that negotiation was nickel and dime because that was their incentive structure. They had to get 2% off of every single person to meet their quota. And that incentive is really bad.
And let's be completely honest, right? If that person's being graded on that incentive, they're obviously going to do it because that's how they get their bonus or whatever, or their numbers. They don't like it either.
No.
And so that's a bad incentive. And the whole thing where you have the person that's now joining your team had probably a great process. And now that's what leaves them right before they got to make that decision. It's not good for that either, especially for a good person that knows that they can go elsewhere and be happy with a role.
There's so much that happens better when the manager runs the show and then people challenge the manager, not challenge the candidate. If I were to simplify it, the optimal solution I would see in the sense of you can challenge the manager's decisions and he has to justify, prove, or he/she has to justify, prove. But the key thing is that person's the ultimate responsible person. And by being that, then because they're the one that lives with the right incentives, they can push back. They're like, look, I'm not going to fight over $10,000 for this person. It doesn't make sense. I know it's outside of the comp bands, but we're not going to change this. Then the insert part is like, hey, how do we negotiate on start time?
Yeah. So listen, I think my org does it great. It's on the hiring manager. It's on me. Mm. It's on me to actually figure out what I'm willing to actually go and try. If it's over, I'm willing to go and try to justify for. And then I have to go and get a budget buster or have to make the case for this to some type of compensation committee or hiring committee. And that makes it even a better thing now.
Yes.
Incentives. Because the person, me or my boss, that's going to have to go do it, they need to be damn sure that the person they're doing it for is going to be a good hire.
Yep.
So it's now good for the company too.
And at the same point in time is that person is going to be a part of your team.
Yep.
They're going to be integral inside of 4 to 6, 8 weeks, whatever the time frame is. And that experience will set the tone for when they walk in the door. And that tone being like, hey, this place is just going to get me in the door. They want me here. At all points in time, it felt like I was the thing they wanted. That's a really empowering position and really means you're going to be pretty productive day one because you're looking forward to it. It's in the knowledge worker space, it's really valuable.
Yeah. And listen, I fully understand knowledge worker space being, but I think, how do we optimize it for everyone's benefit? How we turn into a system where I saw great, you saw great. Right. We were on both sides of it. How can you scale it to more companies or train it?
I've been trying to, I thought there was a business in this by the way, yeah. I literally think there is a business improving this for companies, either consulting or other things, because look, I'm going to say it very clearly. You have to get agreed on expectations with everybody ahead of time. Plan it out like a good old business plan. Don't just see it's something else you have to put on a manager. Write it down and plan. Set up some expectations. They don't have to be 2 weeks like I was talking about. We're going to get to an answer and to a full technical answer inside of 2 weeks. And we're going to make a decision within 2 more weeks after that. And we will get it back to the manager being able to make the offer or wherever in that time frame. That is such an awesome set of expectations that everybody can work with. It's not too aggressive. 2 weeks is really aggressive. 4 weeks isn't too aggressive. You can do that with calendars.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then right there, you now have a clear way. Now you have boundaries. So the manager's like, I got a comp band of $10 to $20. Okay. That's my expectations. I will be within that. If I don't break from that boundaries, I get to make the decision.
Yeah.
And if I need to go over by 1%, I'm going to go over them anyway. I'm going to go 1.1. That's fine. But if I go over 10%, I'm going to have to go stand up to the management committee, whoever I need to talk to. That's fine too, but prepare to do that. But you have 4 weeks to do all that. And that's doable. And everybody can work within that.
And you, here's the thing, you as a hiring manager should want and be empowered to do that. And you should be, it should be part of your metrics. How do you actually manage the talent on your team? It's not just a person's job that's outside your organization to get you in the door. That's your job as a leader. All the time.
And when it's going bad, like your team's on fire, you set the expectations and go, you guys are going to reach out to your network. I will be available 24 hours a day.
Yep.
I'm going to be available to make sure this happens. I'm going to be with every single person I can in my extended network. And they're going to see me do it. They're going to hear about where I talk about it, because my job, more than anything, even more than strategy, is making sure there's the right people to do the job. Because strategy doesn't work if there's not the right people.
I think you mentioned a few minutes ago about giving the people, the decision makers, making it further down the list of who can actually make that decision to hire, right? And especially if you've approved, and this is, I think, a lot of places, surprisingly, don't have comp bands. At least they have comp ranges, but they don't have like carte blanche approval for the comp bands, even though it's part of the role that's being opened. So it's the approval chain for that actually still needs to go up to a different set of approvers. That doesn't make any sense. That's why you have comp bands.
My favorite thing I've come across, well, favorite as in most dastardly and breaking of compass, is that there was an actual, the manager's, the comp band is, let's say, $90 to $100, whatever that means. But there was actually a real comp band, which was the manager can make a decision to 90 to 95. And we're not going to tell them that. And I've seen organizations where they have what they the more hidden bands, where they have a second qualification where that somebody's got to verify the manager is really making the right decision from 95 to 100. And I think that might be one of the worst ways to create a culture where you don't trust, where your manager feels disempowered and expectations get blown out of the water because suddenly everything changes.
I think that if the system that in a perfect system that is entirely data driven, and if you could see the performance of the manager, I wouldn't mind that occasionally happening just to check to make sure the manager's making the right decision. But every single time, and simply because there's a hidden, like, oh, we don't want them always going above the 5% in the range, like above the 50th percentile in the range. Yeah, that doesn't make, like, just tell the person.
Yes, that's it.
Just literally tell the person that's responsible. Just say, listen, your band's 90 to 95, but nope. we'll go to 100, but you got to come talk to me.
Right. And that's the key thing. That's it.
That's it.
I'm happy to. I just go, I don't think you need somebody at that pay range. It's to hold it, blah, 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 blah. And be clear. Like, hey, like, I don't want, this is your first time hiring and you have decision. I give you full carte blanche in the entry level of that range. But on the top end, I want to double check. And I think that's an honest question and statement.
And the reason, so let me tell you the reason why I would want that system, and it's probably not the reason you think. If the hiring system found that someone was always hiring people at the lower end of the comp band, I want someone to step in and talk to that person and make that judgment separately. Why? Because I don't want to have to be hiring another person in 2.5 years.
This is the other conversation you should be having with managers. Is the manager's job is to push, why can't I have 105?
Right.
Because that is your expectation. I should be pushing you down, not pulling you up in spend. The reason why is that you should be training your teams upwards and getting them to be more efficient, better, stronger, performing per employee. And as that happens and that trajectory happens, you can't find those people externally. And you're going to, in order to max them out, like, hey, if I've been hiring people at $100 for the last 3 years, but I've been training all my current ones and they're already at 120, guess what? Bringing another 100 is going to be a problem probably, because they're going to take longer to come up to speed. They're not going to be in they won't be the peers of the rest of the team. They're probably not the team members you need right now. Push. Your job as a manager is to push for the right person. And that means you need to have an understanding of comp across all of them, not just the idea of what they are now and not just the hiring bands.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true, right? That's more about making sure that when you're executing on a strategy or on a hiring strategy, to make sure you're hiring appropriately given the team. Because if you're skewed one way or the other with more juniors, more seniors, or people that are just doing completely different things on the team, the dynamics of how the team operates are going to be crazy and honestly sometimes untenable.
Yeah, and that's an incentive that can come out of that downward pressure. Yeah. Is you're going to try to not have to hire I can get away with this hire and he's good enough. I don't want good enough. I want the right person for the job.
So, right. And you're probably not really sure who you should be hiring.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to revisit like what you're trying to hire. Cause if you're continually going, or maybe the bands are wrong.
Oh, the amount of times the bands are wrong.
So we got a few minutes left in our, what are some of them? We'll talk a little bit about our experiences. And I'm going to start with, you mentioned having something in your career where you had 144 to how long it took you were looking for a person. I have a very similar experience where I don't know the exact number, but it was definitely in the 30s, maybe the 40s personally. And there was more than one person that were doing phone calls. It was probably 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you exactly when it happened. When we made that bad hire. Because the person on the team, the management, did not want to have to get rid of another person. And they became scared of every single hire that they were going to make.
And there is I try to think about these hiring as, and what are the timeline of decision impacts? And a junior impact is like that. Those people are making decisions that last days and weeks. A very senior or a senior architect, they're making decisions that last 5 years. Those are also roughly the timelines of how much impact they can have on people is. The more authority, the more ability they have to change, the more ability they have to create a bad working environment, and the impact takes much longer. And it means that when you find something not working out, you have to cut even sooner, the more senior somebody is, because they can drag so much down. I don't know how to fix that. That is such a individual to a company culture issue, where if the company is risk adverse in that particular way, it's so hard to deal with because they don't have a system. It's like not having an immune system for getting rid of people. It means that they just can't have anything besides external defenses, cannot let bad people in.
The other thing in particular that comes to mind and that's from that situation as well is when it takes, do the math, if phone calls, interviews half hour and I did it 30, that's half a week of my time, right? That's 6 months, 4 to 6 months of not having another person on the team. Do you really need that person? Where can you go in a job where you can wait 6 months, 6 months, and not be productive? And it really boils down to just like the government, you got to bill it and you don't want to lose it. And that's the wrong way to run an engineering team.
It's the wrong way to run any team almost. I can't think of many that can. What happens is you sweep the headcount. 6 months is too long. You obviously didn't need it.
Yeah.
And there is something it's for a different podcast, which is, I think there needs to be a percentage of inefficiency in organizations. But it's so hard to say that because it can be so manipulated, but that's a whole nother podcast.
So that was kind of my thought about wanting to have automatically generate it. Like in an ideal world, I would have someone double check work of certain individuals based on efficiency or other metrics. Mm-hmm. We do it today with source code. We can. There's no reason we can't do it today with the soft decisions we need to make inside of a business, right?
I think we should just talk about them. I don't know if you need to get bring. I want to bring data to every argument, but sometimes it's much easier just to, hey, are we doing a good job? Let's sit down.
Oh, agreed. The data doesn't need to come to the argument, but you can use the data to make a decision to force that conversation.
Oh, if the decision isn't, conversation isn't happening, use the data to make it happen. Or just make the conversation happen.
I mean, listen, think about it. If you could have the data from Workday or Cerulean or some other HR feed, rather than automatically create a meeting with the hiring manager and the talent agent or when they haven't met in more than 4 weeks, the system does it and it forces it.
Yeah, I'm all for that. I just also think more conversations that are meaningful and they know what the expectations are. I mean, that's the thing I always want.
Yeah, yeah. So one thing we didn't talk about, and I have a lot of experience with this, hiring a few different senior roles more recently, where you are a hiring manager and you go to an outside sourcer to try to find the perfect candidate for you. At the heart, because it's an inefficiency, use the, factor, right? But sometimes it's needed.
I'm going to tell you, I had an outside sourcer for a company source me. It was the greatest experience I've ever had and taught me more about how to hire people, how to get them hired, and that it was a sales relationship in bi-directional. And he not only made sure that everything was lined up because they didn't have what we talked about, that structure.
Yeah.
He wouldn't let that go. He was like, no, I need the name of everybody ahead of time. I need to know what time and what order. And if it's a changeup, I need to know 24 hours ahead of time. And then he made sure that everything was lined up because he created that experience as that middleman, and taking that great experience, he created in the middle. And because he knew the company couldn't do it, he knew I was not empowered to do it because I'm not the company. And he goes like, look, you guys have contracted with me to hire talent and I will get it in the door, but you'll do it my way. And he then, on the inverse side, I let him negotiate my contract. And that worked out in my benefit because I walked in the door, not pushing and pulling against anybody. I was like cleaning. No, I didn't negotiate. He did.
Yeah.
And it worked really well for me.
So I think that's awesome. And that was actually what I wanted to get out of the conversation. But one of the interesting things that you mentioned is that he negotiated the salary, right?
Yes.
So not all talent sourcers that you work with do that. Because a lot of times the relationship is from the company to the sourcing.
Well, so I emulate this person since then. It's something that as you move up, it's more and more important, particularly when the numbers get big and the pressure gets high, that you want to be able to walk in day one and say like, look, I hired somebody, I outsourced that so that I don't have to walk in here day one and have a conflict with anybody. Because if you're being hired by the board or you're being interviewed by the board, it's really tough to then be the next person to show up there and try to negotiate with them when you just browbeat them over your own pay for the last 3 days.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I took advantage of that. And it's something I think I would try to take advantage of even more going forward, but it's going to take the right person in between the companies.
Yeah. I mean, listen, that the interesting things we talked earlier about being inside of an organization, being on the other side as well. No one wants that feeling of like having to nickel dime someone and then have to go work with them. It just sours the relationship.
Yeah. And the numbers nowadays are big. Mm-hmm. They really are.
Yeah.
Like in the professional world we're in. And with big numbers, little numbers don't matter that much.
Right.
And I've seen deals get lost over $10,000. On a $250,000 employee. And it wasn't because the money was right. It's because the person felt that why the fuck are they fighting over $10,000 on $250,000? And it was just a bad experience. They felt like, why are they eking out? So now, don't get me wrong, there's some people that understand and they're just going to be robots and they're going to negotiate for every dollar and they expect that from both sides. But that's far less people are like that than people are going to be like, why are they browbeating me for $10,000?
It's a, to use a smell, a code smell.
Yep.
You know, so it, one of the things that, you know, I kind of actually, I think that we need to do a follow-up. I'm not even going to ask this question because I feel that we've approached the conversation, I think, rightfully to begin from a different angle. I wanted to ask you the opposite, though. When you take a call from a recruiter or an agent, like, how do you know when to pick it up? But that could be a whole nother hour.
That's an hour plus. Yeah, I'm gonna have to defer on that because that will take a long time. And Ozzy, while he's not here, the ghost of Ozzy will beat us and be like, "What the hell are you doing with that?"
So, we're at the final word. I'm gonna give it to you because you've done a lot of the talking, synthesized a lot. But I want to hear it from you. What's the final word on talent acquisition?
As a hiring manager, it's your job to control everything to make it go as smoothly and as well as possible. This is the job of you to hold the talent acquisition. It's your job to hold the team in bay, to make sure it's transparent, fully understandable, and goes fast and efficiently. I don't care if it takes 50% of your day. If you spend 25 hours a week and you haven't done it in 4 weeks, 8 weeks, you need to spend more time. This is the single most important part of a manager you can do as your job. So set expectations, go fast, go well, and know what you're going to do. And most importantly, write it down so other people can know what you're trying to do. I believe this across all of the things, but hiring even more so. Knowing who to put in front of whom. What people are good at interviewing for what. Knowing your resources, knowing your people, and knowing the timeline that you can get them in front of them. It's empowering and allows you to make choices and execute quick. And on top of that, the faster you go to meet your expectations, the less other people are going to push back against you. And that means you're going to get the talent you want when you want to solve your problems now. And then guess what? You got great people doing great things. You can run with it. And that's the final word.
Thank you for listening to another episode of our podcast. To support us, please subscribe on LinkedIn, Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. We love feedback. You can reach us at feedback@biteswisdom.com. Until next time, stay curious.